We're speaking now with Jalen Peters. He is the Zone 2 candidate for Lake Pendere School District Trustee. Jalen, thank you for being here.
Yep, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start out with an introduction. Tell us a bit about your background, how long you've been in Sandpoint, any family or community ties you want to mention.
Okay. My background, I've been married for just over 20 years, and I have three boys, young boys, 13, 11, and 9. They're going to be turning 10 and 12 soon, so I had to think about that. We've been in the area for just over 4 years, originally from Arizona. And we live in Kokalala, so technically not Sandpoint. Thus, I'm running for Zone 2. My background is I've been in ministry. I was a youth pastor for many years. I helped in youth ministry. I also was a lead pastor, planted a church from there in Arizona. So I have a lot of experience with students. I like to tell people, as a youth pastor or a kids pastor, you're not really a youth pastor, you're a parent pastor. You work a lot with parents and partner with them and really just come alongside and encourage them in how they're raising their kids as best we can. So I had that in my background. I've been a construction superintendent for a large residential contractor and handled overseeing those projects and budgets and those types of things. I've also done a lot of missions work, foreign and local, medical missions, building trips, just general missions trips. And so I've been a part of organizing those and managing those, which has given me a lot of experience as well. I own my own business. I own a handyman business here in the area. And obviously I've got to work with my budgets and contractors and making sure everything is paid and paid on time. So I know a lot of the questions I'll get is about money. And so I've dealt a lot with budgets. I'm kind of OCD when it comes to that. And I want to make sure that the bases are covered with finances. And so I have a good amount of experience with that in my administrative qualities too. So,
mm-hmm. Okay. Are there any other elective positions you've ever held or community nonprofit organizations you volunteered for that you want to mention? You just mentioned your ministry, yep. So that falls in that category.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a part of ministry for many years. My dad is a pastor, still is today, and so I kind of grew up in that, you know, all the time. But nothing beyond that. I've ran for other positions. And I've been a part of Little League boards and things like that, but nothing that's been voted really from the public. Yeah.
Well, you've been here 4 years, so that means you didn't attend Sandpoint or Lake Pendere District schools. Do you have any children or grandchildren attending schools in the district?
I do not. Nope. I homeschool. My wife and I homeschool my three boys right now, and we have from just before COVID, pre-COVID, so that was kind of a good design how that worked out, because many parents had to do that anyway. I homeschool them, and my reasons for that is I only have them, my wife and I only have them for a few years, and we both work from home, and so it's a great opportunity that we have to be able to be with our kids, not just educate them, but to actually get the time to be with them before they're out of the house. And so that's probably the main reason why we homeschool. Nothing against schools. We used to send them to private school, but we realized, man, we have no time with our kids, so we even pulled them out of that, you know. So it's really about the time that we have with our kids right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, it begs the question, do you feel you're well informed about what's happening in the classrooms at the district schools?
I do. Yeah, I know a lot of people. I'm in the community. I talk to a lot of people that have students in the classroom. I attend the board meetings right now, and so I'm able to see and hear a lot of the happenings with that. So I do feel I'm pretty well informed, obviously not as well as maybe some others, which I think is probably happens with almost any position. I am well informed. And, you know, going back to the ministry days and even till today, even though my kids aren't in the district, I still care about students. I still care about families. And one of the things, and I'm sure we'll get to, is my family first approach. I care about the kids. I care about them graduating high school and being contributors to a society, being contributors to their marriages, to their jobs, to their children. And so just because my kids aren't in the district, as far as attending one of the schools, doesn't mean I don't want successful kids, students to grow up and become successful citizens. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, my next question you kind of answered already.
Okay.
How many school board meetings have you attended the past couple of years?
Oh, I don't know. Probably 6 to 8-ish. Oh, couple years. Yeah, 6 to 8. Mm-hmm. I really started attending them probably this year, early this year, off and on. And then the last, couple months for sure, as I've made the decision to run for this position, to really start getting to the nitty gritty and attending and
studying up
a little bit more than just having the passion to be a part of the community, but really the education and part of, educating myself a little bit more. So,
okay, on to the issues. What do you feel are the most important issues in this campaign?
So the number one thing that I'm kind of talking about and using as my platform is the family first model. That's really what I want to work toward. And as a board member, that's what I would want is more parental involvement in the class, in extracurricular activities. And that's either through monitoring, sit-alongs, kind of like the old-fashioned ride-alongs with officers back in the day, but to be able to schedule out sit-alongs where parents can be aware by sitting in, not disrupting, but just being a part, things like that, to get parents more involved, syllabuses for classes to get home earlier so parents can study up and know what's coming. It's hard for parents, I think, to know what's happening in the classroom right now without their student telling them. And I have a teenage boy. He does, I ask him a question. It's small one, yes or no answers, if they tell me anything at all. And so to be able to let parents be more involved without having to interrogate their kids every day, to get those answers, which is still a good thing. You want them to be involved. But parental monitoring, parental accountability, and also really taxpayer accountability. There's a lot of people in this district that don't have children that attend the schools, and we need to be accountable to them. Just because they aren't parents doesn't mean they're not, they're taxpayers. Doesn't mean they shouldn't be informed, shouldn't be held, we shouldn't be held accountable to them. And that's a big one for me, that fiscal responsibility for the taxpayer, as well as parents that have students.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's follow up on that one.
Okay.
Do you think the district's being fiscally responsible right now?
I think to some degree, yeah. I know their books are doing well. I think some of that comes from the COVID money and also the permanent levy, which I am opposed to a permanent levy. Now, subsidized levies that happen off and on may be good and I think can be addressed, but anything that's a permanent tax, I don't really agree with for property owners. So yes, the books look good, but I think that some of those reasons are areas that I don't really agree with. I don't believe in accepting federal money to the extent that we have. A lot of that has strings attached to it. And so I'm researching some of that and what are the strings attached to the state and federal money that is in relation to COVID that we've taken as well. So yes, they look good. There is some frivolous spending that I feel like, I had somebody tell me years ago, and it's kind of the not to do list is as important or more important than the to do list. And so with that, with spending, We always want to add things to our projects and take more money, but maybe we need to start to address the things that are dragging us that we can cut. Maybe we don't have to accept as much if we're able to cut some things that are taking money.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's back up to a more generalized question. Do you think the district is doing a good job or a poor job in educating its students overall?
Well, I think that it's average, and the statistics that, the level of the education, the percentages that kids are, with the national level is average. It's right at average as far as the amount of money we're spending for students and their education level. I do feel that a lot of schools in general, and it includes LPOSD as well, has a high focus on college readiness. And don't get me wrong, I think that's important for students that are going to attend college and looking for a college degree. But I also feel that there needs to be a greater investment in students that aren't going to attend college. Maybe they want to work in their family farm or do something like that in the service industry. And I want to really, as part of one of the things that I'm putting out as my platform, is to invest at a greater level to those that are in trades or trade schools. And I know there's some trade opportunities at Sandpoint High School. And so I want to invest in that at a greater level. I feel like the education is average. It can be better, but it's not the worst.
Well, we rolled right into my next question
okay,
here
hey.
On technical education. The district's actually been putting more emphasis on providing what they call CTE, or career technical education, to students that aren't interested or likely to go to college. And you just said that you're in favor of that, of continuing that emphasis on that type of education.
Right. Yeah.
Are there any specific classes that you'd like to see them add for, and those, you know,
right,
in those career paths?
You know, in looking at the online research that I've done for Sandpoint High School and their CTE programs, it also says in a lot of the goals that they, well, the classes and programs that they offer are tied to North Idaho College or also Idaho University of Idaho, which are good, but maybe the classes don't need to have college credits attached to them, because it almost is like offering those classes so that they can be more advanced as they attend college, you know, further ahead. And I don't necessarily think that that is needed in every case. We don't have to have trades classes offered that are going to have college credits. There are some that are as well, but I think that there are a lot of trades, especially the construction industry. Look at our housing market right now. It's crazy, right? And anybody who has paid attention at all knows, I mean, I own a handyman business and I've had to turn down jobs.
Because you can't get enough staff to help
right.
you.
Yeah. And I can't do it all myself. And so if I had three or four competent people, even young people who are ready to work hard and learn, boy, I wouldn't have to turn down jobs right now. And so, you know, whether it's plumbing or electrician or, you know, a rancher or whatever that might be, the work industry in this area is growing, especially construction. And so how many of these signs around here say help wanted, you know, in restaurants or wherever? There's a lot of jobs that don't require college degrees. Mm-hmm. And I think that start of the CTE program is good, but I think it can be invested in a little bit more as we dive into it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go to the other end of the public school spectrum. The district's made a priority to offer all day kindergarten, mm-hmm. and it's secured funding for it in most, if not all the schools. I'm not clear if they had it for all the schools, but that's the intent, is to provide mm-hmm. it in all the schools. And in that respect, it wouldn't put a financial burden on parents that want to have their kids in kindergarten. Where do you stand on this emphasis on all-day kindergarten?
Well, I don't necessarily think I agree with it. I think it can be offered, but not fully paid by the state. I know that's a tough one. I need to do some research on it, probably a little bit more on the statistics. I have seen some numbers that say all-day kindergarten does not help the longevity, the education longevity of students. It doesn't get them more advanced. I think it may be helpful for parents as a daycare, especially those that maybe need it financially. And so I think that if it is an all-day kindergarten, maybe we look at the model of having it to where it's income specific. You know, at certain income levels, they get maybe, I wouldn't say perks, but they get the option of having all-day kindergarten because they need it. But then those that don't fall below that income line, if they want to have all-day kindergarten, they can invest in it out of their own finances. Again, that's one of those things. We take money from state or federal that was it voted on? You know, do we need it? Similar to the meals that are being offered right now, breakfast and lunch for every student in the district, regardless of income. I don't necessarily agree with that. We don't need to be accepting grants or federal or state money for things we don't need. I personally don't. My kids, if they were in the class, the school wouldn't need paid for meals. We could afford that. Mm-hmm. And I would like to see that not be the way our district goes, where we just take free money because it's free money, and then sometime down the road, it comes back to bite us.
Well, it's not on my list here, but let's follow that one up a little bit. So do you think there's a need? I guess I would phrase it this way. Don't you think there's a need for some families to have access to that food for their kids?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And again, I would also say, is there a way through the districts who can, maybe we look at the grant that's being offered for meals, right? And we then say, okay, the grant is being offered for every student in our district. But then why can't we say, well, maybe we do a little bit of surveying, right? I think that they did that survey in Clark Fork High School, middle school, and the parents said they didn't want it for breakfast because there wasn't enough students that were going to be there. And maybe we survey all the parents and we are able to then deny or not take some of that grant money because it's not needed as just being a fiscally responsible person. Just because it's there doesn't mean we need to take it, you know. But yeah, I do think there are parents and families that would benefit from that. And so having some type of program would be a good idea to where we can assess income levels and offer that. Sure.
Yeah, and they had that previously, and then they decided to open it up to, you know, without that financial qualification because they felt that some kids were not getting food because their parents just weren't dealing with the financial requirement part of it, even though they would qualify for it.
Sure. Yeah, and I remember as a kid going to public school, I remember my parents having to buy the little 10-punch pass, lunch pass, you know, and I had to have that and carry that. And I went through the lunch line and they punched it. But my parents paid up front for that, you know, and having some type of program where, obviously maybe not a punch card, but a scan card on their student ID, but where parents then either paid for their kids' lunches or let them take their own lunch to school, depending on their financial, you know, capabilities.
Okay, on to another topic here. What do you see as the role of high tech in education? The districts achieve what they call one-to-one access to get kids online, meaning each student has access to a Chromebook now. And students who don't have internet connectivity at home, for them, the districts prioritize in-person teaching at the schools to ensure that the students have access to the internet to do their classes. What's your posture or feeling about utilizing computers and the internet as teaching tools?
I think that it's a good thing. The tech industry and how tech is going, I think, is generally a good thing, but there is a lot of slippery slopes with it. And we could probably, I don't know if we have time, and I'd need to do some research, but I know there's a lot of issues young people are having with technology and becoming addicted, whether it's video games or some other level. You know, the average amount of hours people or students put themselves in front of a TV every day, you know. And so I think that technology and online access is good, but I think that having some boundaries, and I do think LPOSD has good amount of boundaries with internet access and websites that are inappropriate or illegal. And I know that they're working hard on that, and I've even seen them, you know, give the reports. There's always new sites coming out every day, so they have to literally be on it all the time trying to block the new site that these people are trying to put out. So I think it's a good thing, but I also think it can be a slippery slope, and social media can be dangerous. I mean, that's just my view on it. I limit my kids quite a bit and their technology, their media intake. And so I think with boundaries for protection of the student, I think it's a good thing, sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, on to another topic. Let's talk about critical race theory. The Idaho legislature this year passed a bill that Governor Brad Little signed to ban the teaching of critical race theory in public schools. Do you think this is an issue for our schools here in Lake Pend Oreille School District?
I do. And I think, you know, critical race theory is not a curriculum. It's an ideology. It's a theory. And so the theory of critical race theory, I think, weasels its way in into our conversation, into literature, into rewriting history. That's kind of the goal of the 1619 Project, which kind of came from critical race theory. And so I think, yes, you can ban CRT as a curriculum, but the idea of it and its theory, I think, can come in many different ways. And without parents being vigilant and knowing what's in books, what's in curriculums, I think it can be a dangerous thing. And a lot of places around our country, it's gotten to the point where it's almost too late. And parents are now realizing it, and you see it all over the news, and you see even our government calling some of these parents who don't want it domestic terrorists. And I don't think that's right either. And I don't want to get to that point. And so I think it is maybe not a major issue now, but I do want to be at the forefront and be almost like a watchman for this district to keep it out and promote patriotism, promote history as it happened, regardless of feelings, and which are keys and kind of how critical race theory wants to rewrite history. So, yeah.
Well, okay, let's define critical race theory. Okay. How would you define it?
It's a Marxist ideal that it was founded in Marxism, and the idea that America was founded on racism. And
slavery, the 1619 Project specifically, right, refers to the first year that African, right, slaves were brought here. Yeah.
Yep. On slavery, and which is racism. And it then, because of that foundation of a country and our constitution, CRT, then its goal would be to rewrite those things or say that the constitution is not valid because it was founded that way, which then the rule of law in America is not the way it should be, the justice system, and it should be rewritten. That's what CRT claims, because it was founded on racist qualities. And so that would be how I would define it, and that's where it started. And I don't agree with those things. I think CRT is very based in our feelings and not the facts, and that maybe isn't popular, but that's kind of how I would define it. I do know that there's a movement going around in the last few years called SEL, Social Emotional Learning. And it's, in a way, I think, subtly taking the place of critical race theory, because CRT is becoming a very taboo topic, and people are coming out knowing it's wrong and coming out against it. And so I think it's been being rebranded a little bit through SEL. And so I would encourage listeners to investigate social emotional learning.
Do you know of any specific classes that have been employing critical race theory as part of their curriculum?
Here in the district?
Yeah.
Well, like I said, CRT is not a curriculum, but the ideals that it goes to is it's the indoctrination part of things more than educating. And I think that is the goal of CRT, is to indoctrinate and make people and students, young people that have moldable minds, believe that racism is the problem that CRT claims it is. And, I know college levels, and there's plenty of examples, but to speak to specific to LPOSD, we have done a little bit of research on, I think it's called ReadyGo or ReadyGen is the curriculum that they use from first grade to sixth grade. It might be kinder to sixth grade here in the district. And there are some questionable things that are happening in there, and stories. The very first story in one of the books I looked at, the very first one was about a boy. He was an African-American boy who was adopted by his Caucasian aunt. And a couple paragraphs in, he's talking about how his aunt is racist and doesn't want to listen to him. She only wants to listen to white Presbyterian people. And that may be true, but the very first story, it seems it's confusing to me. Or maybe baffling that would be the very first story that would be in this book. It's those kinds of things that I think we need to be watchful for. A fictional story talking about white Presbyterians being racist, I think, is probably crossing the line. And so,
well, one more question because we do got to get on. But,
sure.
But so, do you think there's systemic racism as reflected in, the way, Blacks or minorities are hired, the numbers that are hired, or historically we did have slavery, and then we, sure, did have the Jim Crow era, basically, sure, segregation. Yeah. How should the schools teach about these things?
Well, the truth of those two topics that you just mentioned, slavery as it started in our country and the Jim Crow era, were both heavily supported by the Democrat Party. Abraham Lincoln, a Republican, was against slavery, and we fought a war for that. The first country of it's kind to do that. And I think that was a huge deal. Jim Crow era, heavily supported by the Democrat Party. You can do the research on that. And so I think the truth of those topics is to step back and look at now the Democrat Party is, and this is a nonpartisan race, but this the topic, mm-hmm. The Democrat Party is accusing the conservatives of being racist when the history has been never that. The Republicans slash conservative, which that's debatable right now anyway, have almost every time been in favor of abolishing slavery or fighting against that and having equality. And so that's a little bit of the history with that. I think systemic racism is not in America today. I think that the statistics, there's a lot more statistics with why minorities are or aren't being hired. I would even go back to the family. Not just my family first model with the LPOSD, but families in general and parents, fathers, mothers, both being at home. And I would kind of lean toward that as being maybe a bigger problem than racism.
Mm-hmm. There's more to talk about all these topics and other topics, but we're just about out of time. How do people get in touch with you if they want more information about your campaign?
Okay, so I have a website. It's just my name, Jalon A. Peters. So JalonAPeters.wixsite. That's WIXSITE.com. It's kind of a weird website, but hopefully you got that. I know. Or you can find me on Facebook. Just look for Jalon Peters, campaign for LPOSD.
Yeah. And the Sandpoint election page on Sandpoint Online is a link to your website as well,
Correct.
So you can get there that way. Okay, well, Jalon Peters, that's trustee candidate for Zone 2. Thanks for talking with us.
Yeah, thank you.